When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to a new episode of the Football Ramble. Norwich are down, North London is white. It's Monday, the 13th of July. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm what remains of Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushina Hantaraja.
Monday, the 13th of July, Jim. Mm. Unlucky for some.
Yep. What are you getting at?
How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm all right. Same as any day, isn't it?
Yeah,
no. When you've lost hope, it's all just one flat grey landscape. So North London's not white, actually, it's grey. It's completely colourless.
This is like when Mum and Dad used to fight. It's got a feeling of that, really. Yeah, a lot of passive aggression.
Oh, right. I thought you were putting yourself in my shoes. I was like, no, I used to feel things then. Back when I used to feel things. Oh, God.
Vish, you still feeling things?
You know, I'm feeling great, actually. It's nice to be in a position where your team aren't giving kind of light relief to your bitter rivals, Jim.
Yeah.
I feel really great. I don't know how. You talked about the other day about how Danny Welbeck's overhead kick had kind of created some kind of issue with the time space line, and suddenly, you know, nature was healing.
Yeah.
And I cannot abide by that, because it is really unsettling having a Manchester United team that are functional while everything else burns. So
I don't know. I think a Jose Mourinho team kind of exploiting an Arsenal team by just letting them destroy themselves is pretty, like, consistent, isn't it?
Yeah,
that actually sort of fits up with a return to reality, does it not?
Yeah, it does actually, yeah. There was something about the North London derby that was, you were kind of, everything gearing up to it was the fact that, right, Mourinho, this is it. This will be the game where suddenly he might walk away himself into the pit of fire.
Into the abyss.
Yeah, yeah. You know, in 300, where the guy gets kicked down the black hole, but Mourinho will do that to himself and drag Spurs with him. And then somehow they won, because as you say, they just let Arsenal destroy themselves.
Well, we can come on to, I mean, loath as I am to stop the train of this particular thought process,
yeah,
Jim, I think we have some other news to cover before we get to the crux of the North London matter, and that is Manchester City.
Yes.
So, The news is out, posted on the CAS website, 9:30. We were there, ready to receive it. And the news is that Manchester City will be playing in European football for the next couple of years.
A victory,
certainly,
for the underdog. I'm sure we can all agree. For the little guy. So standing up to those fat cats at City Hall.
Yeah.
That is it's lovely. It's lovely to see. Just to cover it off quickly, they basically said that the two-year ban was effectively excessive and that the fine was too much as well. So it's been reduced from 30 million euros to 10 million euros. The idea is that most of the alleged breaches reported by the adjudicatory chamber of UEFA club financial control body, say that in a rush, were either not established or time barred.
Mm.
And that the problem mainly was that City didn't initially cooperate with the investigation.
Yeah, which is still, why are they not cooperating? And the time barred thing is interesting as well, isn't it? Because obviously it's quite opaque and there's a lot that I guess we'll never know about that. But for a brief moment, it looked like, you know, the Champions League was going to go down to fifth and that was going to be really exciting in a season where, you know, one team had just run away with it. We had that little sort of snippet of something a little bit more interesting, and that's been taken away by the admin bods.
Well, it is interesting that Man City join Paris Saint-Germain and AC Milan as the other teams who have successfully lobbied against the UEFA decision via CAS. And as you said, yeah, it is just another win for the little guys, isn't it, when you read those teams out together. But yeah, no, it does kind of imprint a bit of itself on the league. I know there were wider issues about FFP and kind of, you know, while it is being suspended for COVID, I think it's actually quite a big blow for FFP in general.
Yeah.
I think there's the premise behind it was absolutely sound in terms of making sure that teams were more financially robust. I think that is the key issue with it beyond, I suppose, any kind of money, financial doping, if that's the right way of putting it. But I think if you looked on Twitter anyway, which obviously is no measure for anything.
That's actually how they did the appeal, isn't it? They just put it to Twitter, little poll.
Yeah. A lot of cry laughing emojis.
What do we read
into
that?
Not sure what to read into that. let's just give them a fine.
All right. So what it means really in terms perhaps that concern us more in the body of the football that we like to talk about is that, of course, Manchester City have already qualified for Europe in terms of their points total. So they are going to be playing in Europe. Liverpool, of course, are going to be playing, the champions are going to be playing in Europe. And now there are only two other places up for grabs currently.
Yeah, yeah. I've kind of, not sympathy is probably the wrong word, because it'd be strange to gear your activity or your work ethic towards this kind of administrative decision. But I do wonder if certain teams who've had their foot off the gas are suddenly thinking, oh shit, right, actually, yeah, we've got to start paying attention again now, because it isn't as open as we thought it was.
Yeah, absolutely. It does seem strange that you would take your foot off the gas like that, Leicester, to start with. But it actually looks like Man United are really in pole position now, because Chelsea's flaws have been exposed over and over again. So it has really been a weird little kind of psychological factor since the initial ruling was handed down. So it's fascinating to see how these final few games play out in terms of, you know, who's actually going to finish fourth, because it looks a lot more open than it once did.
Yeah, and people just repeatedly keep losing to Sheffield United. So, you know, who knows? Chris Wilder doesn't want us to talk about it, but I think it's fun to talk about. Now, two clubs who aren't really, would we say they're in the conversation?
Oh, they're certainly in this conversation, and specifically to you two, your conversations earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that Arsenal are in the conversation anymore. A friend of mine who's a Spurs fan, we sort of help each other through this because it's such a stressful game. At the end of it, he consoled me by saying, oh, cheers for the Thursday nights, which I think is sort of a way to look at it. Because it is like, I don't know, the game was not as kind of frenetic as it usually is. And I wonder if that's because of the weather, for one thing, because it was really hot. It could have been flying ant day. It was flying
ant
day in the UK.
Eight yellow cards. Classic bit of eight yellow card action. And
Jose, isn't it? Then
three for Arsenal. And, you know, given there's no one in the stadium, you've got to expect there'd be a little bit less.
Yeah, but there's so much oomph normally in the game. I don't know, maybe I'm looking at it through the lens of the league's positions, but it felt to me like it was two bald men who'd collectively realised that they've actually got no use for the comb, and it wasn't perhaps as frantic as it normally is.
So the comb in that metaphor, the comb represents
trying. But yeah, I mean, obviously it was still a game where a lot was resting on it. But I just felt it was just such a frustrating display as an Arsenal fan. I'm sure you would disagree with me, Kate, that I'm sure it was a very enjoyable performance from Arsenal's point of view from where you're sat. But just the Kolasinac pass, there were a lot of passes around the back that were just too short. But that one was absolutely ridiculous. Like I'd already predicted that we would concede at that point because it's just what happens in this sort of situation. But I mean, he had a pass on to Kieran Tierney and instead he decided to turn around and run away and then play a really short pass to David Luiz, who even when it, you know, if it gets to him, is David Luiz. So that's going to be potentially, a problem anyway. And it's just so frustrating. It just shows a real lack of character to respond to being receiving the ball in that situation. I think one of the problems that Arsenal have is a lot of dickheads in that squad. And that is some quite dickheadish behaviour, if you ask me.
But supposedly,
I'm too emotional after the fact, but...
You're doing really well, mate. And you know, frankly, so this, of course, is Spurs 2, Arsenal 1 at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. 100% North London derby record for Tottenham. Although, of course, in the Women's Super League, were beaten there earlier on in the season. What we have was a little bit of a chance for Jose Mourinho to patronise Mikel Arteta after the game as well, which was thoroughly enjoyable. Mikel found a way for them to be stable and to improve, and they are improving. Thanks, Jose. I expect
view,
you
yeah.
thought. And frankly, you know, I'm not gonna go after you here, Jim. I have nothing but sympathy, frankly.
Yeah.
Well, beforehand, I mean, I don't know how you felt about it, but I just wasn't excited at all. I didn't feel as though anything good could come out of this. So now that I have the joy of sitting here on Monday, having, frankly, yes, quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And obviously nicked the 3 points and gone above Arsenal in the table. Do I need to summarise any more? Or
no, you can. I wasn't really listening. So I was just, you know how Sherlock Holmes has a little mind palace? It goes off into. I've got one of those and it's got a trophy cabinet in it.
Yeah.
So I'm just having a little stroll around that.
But Sherlock Holmes tends to have useful things in there, doesn't he? So he can like solve cases. I don't know.
Are you sure?
Yeah, mine's just full of nostalgia.
Are you sure it's not a panic room?
There's one of those in there as well. Right, okay. But yeah, that's actually separate. That's just, I use that in my day-to-day life.
I really went into that game and thought that it was Arsenal's for the taking, not least because of Arteta and his improvement over the last month or so, but also just given the noises that were coming out of Spurs with that kind of existential dread. And, you know, Spurs are just, and Mourinho specifically, are now just super spreaders of misery, aren't they? Because winning didn't really give them anything. I don't think Spurs fans are particularly happy.
No, I feel
with the way that they... Yeah, okay, right. But then your misery is going to compound it next, you know, when you have a performance that you're not going to be so proud of.
I think, so you
Newcastle,
have...
Newcastle, I think?
Yeah. You have no feeling that this represents any kind of progress?
No, not from what I gauge, no. Beyond the actual joy that Spurs fans would have felt from beating Arsenal and those Spurs players would have felt from doing the same on the field, I don't think there's anything particularly that they can take out of that game, given that it was an archetypal Mourinho performance that wouldn't have been possible without Arsenal's mistakes, and therefore there isn't necessarily much to build on going forward.
That said, though, that is a big part of Mourinho's style, isn't it? It is identifying the weaknesses of his opponents and letting them sort of do it to themselves. So I was a bit concerned about, you know, the things people were saying about Spurs after the Bournemouth performance, which was very, very flat. But it was one of those things where it's like, okay, this is so bad that they're going to get a rollicking on the training ground and raise it for the next game. And I think to the degree that they needed to, that is what they did. And I think it had... This game, I watched the game and the highlights on Match of the Day because I'm a professional glutton for punishment. And it did have my highlight of the season in terms of commentary, which was Jonathan Pearce talking about Harry Kane. It must have been a slip of the tongue, but he said, he's isolated the Mustafi. Like, that is how you beat Arsenal, really. It wasn't even one of his worst games, but he had a couple of mistakes that we sort of got away with. There was one where Kane was on the ball on the left, and Mustafi, it was like he ran at him, and rather than try and tackle him, it was like he thought, I'll try and be a bit weird at him. And it was almost like he blew on him and then fell over. It was like, oh, come on. We're still doing this. It's sort of, the North London derby is like, it's like hanging out with a really hedonistic friend. You know, it's like, I love this, but it's painful and it's going to hurt for days, and I'm glad I don't do it that often, but I sort of can't get enough of it at the same time.
The way you described Mourinho there of letting Arsenal kind of inflict pain onto themselves, I just had this image of Kolasinac and Louise kind of strapped to radiators in a room, and there's one hacksaw in the middle and they've got to decide what to do with it.
Yeah, and they run into each other somehow. Well, that's, knock each other out.
That is endemic of those two players, that I watched that, you know, that first Son goal, and I couldn't decide who was at fault because both of them are capable of stupidity.
Yeah.
And nonsense. And I don't think you would fill the other with much encouragement if they weren't to be blamed by that. Because I think there is an argument to say that Luiz actually comes too close for the pass, that it's clearly only going to be played to him at a point when Kolasinac turns towards his own goal. So,
I think, he's not expecting Kolasinac to do that. And by the looks of it, Kolasinac wasn't expecting himself to do it. So it's a big old mess, isn't it? But I think that you've got to ask questions about why, when there's Rob Holding and Sokratis on the bench, that Kolasinac is there at all. Clearly, it was a sort of tactical attempt at, I don't know, having a little bit more mobility coming out of the back that Arteta was trying, but I don't think it worked. I think you saw Kieran Tierney literally having taken his place. Oh, I don't like that. Run away from that. Give it to David. It's just very, very messy. And, you know, Arsenal, for all their possession, they had a few chances, but nothing hugely clear-cut. I think both Aubameyang shots were... I've seen people saying Aubameyang should have done better with those shots, but they're both quite tough angles, and the second one in particular was taken very quickly. But yeah, the really depressing thing is next season is this minus Aubameyang, you would think, for Arsenal, which is going to be really, really tough. And yeah, it's just it's rubbish, but it's this or rugby, isn't it? So I'm gonna have to stick with it.
I feel a little bit like I'm Jose of this pod right now, because I'm sitting back and
quietly,
just letting you
beat myself
work
up.
It all out. I mean, you haven't even mentioned there was a highlight for Arsenal, if you recall. Alexander Lacazette's goal. You just haven't even remembered it because there was so much pain.
It was brilliant, though, wasn't it? It was a great goal.
I think
there's an argument. That's one of the great derby goals, right, in recent years. But will it be remembered without the fans? I know a lot of people are talking about this a lot, but I think, are these goals going to stick in the highlight reels in the same way?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, you know, one goal in a 2-1 defeat doesn't necessarily warm the cockles in the way a last-minute winner does. Or indeed, Son becoming the first Spurs player to score and assist against Arsenal in 8 years since. Do you want to hazard a guess as who that was the last Spurs player to do that?
Robbie Keane?
He is.
Spurs player. I'm looking at you, Arsenal. I'm looking at you, Arsenal.
So in eight years.
2012, that would be.
2012.
Oh, Adebayo?
Nice. I'm surprised by
points.
That.
Yeah.
That's a really weird little stat. I have a bit of bone of contention here as well.
Do you? Let it all out.
Head. Do you remember when the Predators came out, the boots Predators, the Adidas ones, they had those little like rivets on them, the plastic ones, and they were like, oh, it makes you kick it super hard. It's like it's cheating. I think there needs to be an investigation into the wedge of hair wax at the front of Toby Alderweireld's head. Is that giving him an unfair advantage when it comes to headers?
I think
quite a lot of power in it.
Sorry to cut in here, Jim, but I think looking at Dani Ceballos' wedge of hair wax, I think,
he doesn't like heading. He likes trapping the ball and then spinning around, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. So I don't think it's the same, actually.
That mention of the Predators reminded me of when I think I was like 8 or 9 at the time, maybe 10. And I went to the shop with my mum to buy some football boots, and the Predators were there. And I was like, I really, really want them, but they were ridiculously expensive. So my mum was talking to the shop assistant about them, and they were like, yeah, it gives you, it was something like 30% extra curl and like 25% extra power. And my mum just looked him up and down and went, he's 10. And I've never forgiven her for that.
Oh, but your mum was ultimately right. You can't.
Or she just backed your natural curl abilities.
You're saying my mum backed my natural abilities?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'd ring her up now and tell her to dispute that, but she probably wouldn't answer my calls. So.
She's too busy listening to the pod religiously, as she does every day.
I hope not, actually, because last week I admitted to smoking and that she would kill me.
Yeah. Vish was like, could you possibly edit that out? We did not.
That's adorable.
So naughty.
Yes.
Look. I'm sure it hasn't escaped your notice, but Tottenham did win this game. And I feel as though we've given a lot of the floor over to negativity about Tottenham over the last few weeks and indeed generally. And fair enough, no one was more kind of morose than me after that Bournemouth Can we call it a performance if it has no performing in it? I don't know. Anyway, the game. So I do feel a Derby win will give you that, the feeling of positivity. But one thing I did like was the way that, for example, just before the end, so probably 89th minute, there was a yellow card on Bukayo Saka because he basically had a little tussle with Moussa Sissoko, and Sissoko was using his experience, and he used it was a mature performance. There were periods obviously when Arsenal seemed as though they were in control, but in fact
the plan all along.
Correct.
Yeah. And
so
actually,
I think, you know, let me have this
well,
one.
Well, I was going to say, like, as a Tottenham fan, obviously, you know, with a style that you've been used to under Pochettino and a style that is kind of synonymous with the club, which is completely different from Mourinho.
For sure.
Do you see that as a sort of encouraging sign that next season, when Mourinho does have his feet under the table a bit more, because the aim is to win something, right?
Correct.
Because
yeah.
that's why you bring Mourinho in. Because even when, you know, he annoys everyone and stuff happens, he wins trophies, and that is perfectly aligned with what Spurs want next in terms of how they grow. Do you see this as a result that shows that actually maybe things are going in the right direction while everyone's talking about what a disaster he is?
It is difficult, of course, to say, because this is the nature of football, isn't it? You're so up and down.
Yeah.
Based on results, it's wild, basically, and I am a bit giddy about having won the North London Derby that I'd kind of pretty much written off, but yes, I liked the way we had Kane and Son working together up front. I thought that was a good idea. It meant that there was more of an ability to get balls to him, and it seemed as though people felt clear about what their jobs were. I think it's good that Alvaro is playing and scored a goal as well. That's a good that's just a good result, I think, especially given that Eric Dier is suspended at the moment. So I don't know, of course, I don't know if this is Spurs building for the future. Many people have said that, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's the sort of short-term thinking that is the problem about Mourinho, that we sacked Poch, we killed off that hope and the building towards something great, whereas Arsenal have it. They've got Mikel Arteta. He's got plans. He's going to create something. You could all be right. But in a sense, you know, Daniel Levy has given us a manager who is hopefully still able to win things. And whatever we say about how beautiful the football is, talk to any Spurs fan who's not lying to you because you're an Arsenal fan over the last few years. And it is shameful that it's been this long without Tottenham winning any kind of silverware. And I don't even really count that League Cup.
So do you look at those players and see them responding to Mourinho next year? Because I think one of the issues I have, in terms of how I view Spurs, is that because Mourinho operates in such a manner, and because one of the main highlights of his tenure there has been his relationship with Ndombele, you actually extrapolate that and assume it among all the players. When you think about it, when he came in, it coincided with an upturn in form for Dele Alli, which was a huge deal at the time because we were building towards Euro 2020, where legitimately you could have grounds for leaving him out. He rejuvenated him. Son had an upturn in form as well. And now you're kind of, as you say, you know, Alderweireld scored, and I was at his first start, Project Restart against West Ham, I think it was, yeah. And, you know, even leading up to that, you're like, oh God, you know, is he falling out with Alderweireld as well? And evidently he hasn't. I think that's something that will be interesting come next season. How much of these issues that we've conflated to an extent because of our jobs, because we talk about it every, you know, five times a week. Mm. How much of that is actually true, and how bad are these relationships genuinely? Mm. Because Spurs fans, by and large, are pretty demoralised for a lot of the reasons that you've already outlined. But behind the scenes, what actual work is being done to sustain this and to create something there? Because as we've said a lot during this period, we can't really judge a lot of these teams on what's going on in this kind of clusterfuck of a finish, even for the teams that are doing well, even for Manchester United, even my team, I'm reticent to come in with any kind of optimism until I actually see something next year in relatively normal circumstances that hints at something long-term. And so for that reason, I suppose, yeah, you know, we should give it to Spurs. We should give it to Jose Mourinho.
What is his name?
For fuck's sake. and maybe next season I'll get that right as well.
I'm with you, Bish. I think you're absolutely right.
I don't know why I'm doing this to myself. We should really, really move on. But obviously Spurs fans for a long time had the reputation of next season. There was a point during the game where I was just daydreaming about what it would have been like if Hugo Lloris had carried a Mustafi overhead kick over the line for Arsenal to win. Because that very, very nearly happened. And that's what we've been reduced to. It's multiverse theory. So, yeah.
Well,
are we allowed to give Jim a hug?
I don't think it's allowed at the moment, unless you want to move in with him. I think
that'd be worth 2 weeks to be able to hug.
Things are escalating faster than I anticipated with this new Ramble crew. I guess, Jim, one last thing to leave you with is that Kim McCauley on Twitter mentioned that a thing to consider, that David Luiz's salary, so Viv Minamar's wage, is 2% of David Luiz's. So if you consider that she's probably one of the greatest players in the women's game.
She's not funny, though, is she? She's not a clown like David Luiz.
No, yeah. And I would say more clowns. The more clowns, the better.
It's not easy to be a clown. It takes a lot of work.
You've got to go to college, haven't you?
Exactly. In France, in some cases.
Let's go to a break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Thanks for sticking with us. Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Now it's time for a recap of Betway's Four to Score. You know the drill by now. Every week, we pick the first goal scorer in Betway's four selected matches. You could be in with a chance of winning a massive cash prize yourself. We play along. We announce our picks in the preview show every Friday. So here is how we got on. It was actually quite a big week, to be honest. Andy Russell, first up, Wolves Everton. An absolute flyer there, as is traditional. He picked Raul Jimenez. Mm-hmm. Penalty. Just before half time.
Finally.
We were
finally
on our way. I don't know about you, Jim, but I was getting pretty excited at this point. I thought the money for charity had our name on it. Jules picked Luka Milivojevic in Aston Villa against Crystal Palace. A decent idea. Yeah. Penalty specialist.
I've made that pick myself.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's a classic pick.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Trezeguet, though. There were to be no goals for Palace. Trezeguet scored both for Villa. So by this stage, we were out, but we were still feeling good about ourselves. Luke then picked Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang in the North London derby. Alexander Lacazette scored that gorgeous strike. Frankly, a high point for Arsenal, which we can all celebrate. But we finished strongly. Marcus Speller correctly picked Jamie Vardy. That is a vintage pick in Bournemouth versus Leicester. Although, I'm not sure he could have predicted what would come next, which is what we're about to go on to. One customer did pick the first three goal scorers correctly, but then didn't go for Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
Oh, crikey. Yeah,
they'll be kicking themselves. Absolutely kicking themselves.
I genuinely can't believe that. When I saw that in the running order, I thought that's got to be some kind of wind-up, because I don't think you can... Yeah, I mean, you would kick yourself. I would be... I'm so sorry for you. Whoever you are, yeah. I'm so, so sorry for you.
We have, you have our commiserations hugely there. The £100,000 jackpot now rolls over for another week. So do get involved. We'll be back with another round of picks for Betway's Fool to Score on this Friday's preview show. 2 out of 4. That equals our best ever tally, doesn't it, Jim?
I think so. Yeah. It's hard, but it's, you know, it's cool.
It's definitely not in the kind of, in the canon of Ramble Games, it fits quite neatly into something that, as a listener, I thought, that's a piece of piss.
Yeah, oh God, yeah,
why they,
completely.
Why do they keep fucking this up?
But at the same time, you want to go again each time, don't you? So here we are.
We go again. Now, just a quick word about some sad news that we had on Saturday morning, that 1966 World Cup winner Jack Charlton had died at the age of 85 on Friday after suffering from lymphoma and dementia. England fans, of course, remember him as a legend, part of that one-off England side. But he's also revered in some ways even more in Ireland for managing the Republic to their highest ever, well, the first World Cup and then their highest ever World Cup finish, the quarterfinals at Italia 90. He's also treasured by a number of clubs. He managed Middlesbrough, Sheffield Wednesday, Newcastle, but none more so, of course, than Leeds United, where he spent his entire playing career, 23 years, unbelievable time. And he won the league there for the first time in Leeds history, as well as the FA Cup, the League Cup, both of those won against Arsenal, actually, Jim, and the Intercities Fairs Cup. Over the weekend, he was honoured, you would have seen, before every Premier League game and in the Championship, and nowhere more so than at Leeds, where he still holds the record for appearances. They've also honoured him on the pitch, actually, late Pablo Hernandez, winner against Swansea, 3 points clear at the top. Fitting tribute, really. They could be going through to the top flight, Leeds, when they host Barnley on Thursday. And there have been a lot of messages on his death, of course, concerning not just what a great player and a great guy he was, but what a great friend and family member. The news broke when I was at Sky on Saturday morning, and it was just so easy to find people who wanted to talk about, you know, their memories of what a great man he was.
I think it's one of the most telling things that I found on social media was that it wasn't just the scale of people and the kind of broad church of football fans who have been touched by him, but also everyone seemed to have a different kind of story. You know, I think I even saw some guy, a Newcastle fan, tweeting his thanks to Jack Charlton for calming down his son in the supermarket. And there was a photo of Jack Charlton with his son in a trolley. And yeah, it's that's kind of the measure of the man. He was also kind of a really highly regarded pundit as well. And I think a lot of people who worked with him say that his views on football were very progressive, given how little football had evolved at a certain period, you know, during the 80s. And as you said, the testimonies really speak for themselves.
There's a really interesting piece by Kevin Sheedy in the Guardian talking about Jack Charlton's legacy at Ireland and how actually the tactical thing he touched on there, Vish, how he'd try and get them to kind of win the ball back in the opposition's half, which at the time seemed kind of revolutionary. And it's like, it's a little bit Guardiola, is it? A little bit high press? Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's overpraising it a little bit. But he also spoke about how when he was managing Ireland, he can't remember him speaking about ever having won the World Cup, which is amazing, isn't it? You would expect any of those players to say, well, when we won the World Cup, we did this, we did that. But apparently he was a bit too humble for that, which is really nice. And yeah, he'll be a big loss.
That's a lovely way to leave it. So, let's get back to the Premier League football, guys. We're going to talk a bit more about the relegation battle, or the end of the relegation battle for Norwich, I'm afraid. Norwich fans, sorry guys. But we're going to just have a little mention of Bournemouth 4, Leicester 1. On Match of the Day 2, it would have been last night, yeah, Mark Chapman. I thought it was a pretty enjoyable ramble moment where he said something along the lines of, you know, sometimes in football you can do all the highbrow analysis you want, but occasionally a game just changes on the goalkeeper kicking the ball into the arse of a teammate.
Yeah, very much so. It really did change as well. It's like everything, it was like an absolute sort of textbook implosion, wasn't it? Everything that could sort of go a bit wrong just did, to the point where it activated Dominic Solanke.
A sleeper agent.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, they always say that there's like a phrase that really, you know, triggers, you know, an agent to go a bit nuts, but it was actually just someone getting the ball kicked really hard in his ass.
Yeah. Soyuncu as well. That was...
Do you not think Soyuncu looks... Do you remember those little Corinthian football figurines where they were like, you know, a little small body on a green plinth with a big head?
Yeah.
Do you not think he looks like the equivalent of that of Carles Puyol?
Maybe like who's been touched up to look a bit like a vampire.
And a little bit of Lord Farquaad from Shrek.
Yes, very much so. Very, very much so.
See, you've got that reference.
Yeah, it's a cultural Shrek. Reference I can get on
there
board with.
There you go.
Only Shrek, I would say only Shrek 1 though, not the rest.
You know Eddie Murphy is the donkey from Shrek, don't you?
Yes.
But and that's it, isn't it?
Yes.
Right, okay.
What do you do all day?
I just list FA Cup winners and try and name obscure players in the NWSL.
This is really, this is going to be a massive tangent because you're really well read and you can tell it in how you pronunciate certain...
Pronunciate? Wow. You second guess yourself there, didn't you?
I've done myself here, haven't
that
I?
That really often happens, doesn't it? Yeah. People are trying to say, I mispronounced that, and they always go, it just turns into an absolute shit show.
But yeah, you know how to pronounce things, and I don't, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
I am actually fascinated by, this is a tangent. I'm actually fascinated by trying to know how different countries, for example, you know, the other day when I said, Jose, it's a hard J because it's Portuguese. I just think it's really cool to be able to work out where players are from and thus be able to try and pronounce it.
Yeah, it's a good quality. After. It's very, very empathetic, but it's just, I like the way it stops. I'll do all the sensible stuff and I don't care about any of that other shit.
What can I say? I just had a lot of violin practice to be doing when I was a kid. Dominic Solanke at 791 days between his first Premier League goal and his second.
That's amazing.
And then he gets two. Gates are open.
Then he gets two. He nutmegs Kasper Schmeichel with a second one. It's genuinely amazing to see that sort of flow of confidence in action, isn't it? Like, this, you know, we talk about, you know, talent and ability and training and preparation and all these different things. But, like, you could see those Bournemouth players, especially when they were 3-1 up, how it was just the all of the tension had gone out of it. They were enjoying it, you know, and actually, like, pinging it about quite nicely. And just in a crazy moment from Solanke, it felt like how on some of the old FIFA games, like you could stick one on someone if the whistle had gone and you'd get away with it. It's like he forgot that it would still count and he'd still get in trouble.
That's another example of, I suppose, how in football things can switch. It switched for Solanke there, as you say, because he got the goal and suddenly his confidence rose. And for Sionchu, who has made his name as a very disciplined defender, had a moment of, no, I just want to kick you really, really hard and I'm going to do that now.
Yeah.
Because even when he walked off, he knew exactly what he'd done.
Oh, yeah.
And there was something quite wonderful about, or maybe actually, to be fair, he did a, you know, Christian Benteke got sent off for Palace.
Yeah.
And now he's out for the season. I wonder if Sionchu thought, well, if you're going to go.
Early on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do it with some style, I suppose. It's it kind of comes back to my theory that if something is bad for Aston Villa, then it will happen, though. Like, they even won, and it's still kind of caught up with them a little bit. I'm scared for them. But there's like, do you think this gives Bournemouth any hope? They've got Man City next. Well, so that's obviously not ideal.
16 to 19 in the table, all won over the weekend, which, yeah, poor West Ham and Watford, frankly. They must have thought, oh, we've done our job here. There's no chance Bournemouth, having seen that performance against Spurs.
Do you know what I'm anticipating, though? Because West Ham and Watford are playing each other on Friday.
Yeah.
And we could be in a Sweden-Denmark situation where they might take a cheeky little draw just to put themselves that little bit further away. They're currently 3 points ahead of Bournemouth.
You are storming today, Bish. Allegations of match fixing.
I'm just saying, you know, they might want to meet each other again next year. They just
keep it friendly. Yeah. For Leicester, they could drop out of the top four for the first time since September tonight. Manchester United, of course, up against Southampton. So depending on the result of that game, sort of an extraordinary situation.
And it
Leicester.
Is a top four again as well, which they have perhaps taken for granted, it would seem.
Do you remember that that speed skating in the Olympics where the four blokes are running around and the Australians just chilling at the back?
And then they all fall over.
He goes through. That's what I'm suspecting for Ole's big boys.
Well, it's good that two of us can have a bit of enjoyment out of this pod today. let's talk about Norwich now, because they are confirmed as being relegated. It's a bit of a sad one, really. Daniel Farke's side scored lots and lots of goals in the Championship last season, came up, we thought they were going to play lovely football, keep attacking, but in the end they weren't really able to attack and they also weren't really able to defend. There was an interesting little Opta heat map of where their their shots and their goals have been scored from last season and this season. And well, last season they had 91 goals, so that excludes penalties, and this season 23. And the fact was they kept still trying to take those shots from outside of the box, but they didn't score any out of the box. So clearly it's more difficult to play football in the Premier League than it is in the Championship. But in some senses, you feel as though Daniel Farke didn't really get a lot of help.
No. And I think a lot of that was because they set their stall out pretty early on, to be honest. When they earned promotion, they knew it was ahead of schedule and they didn't want to spend beyond their means, which is why they actually did sign quite a few players, just no players that would improve them for the Premier League.
Yeah.
Arguably one of their biggest bits of business was signing Buendia, who's been one of their better players this season.
And surely will go now.
Well, he signed a 4-year deal, I think, at the start of in June 2019.
Yeah.
And I think that was with a proviso of buying into this project that they are going to scrap. But, you know, I think it was telling that Daniel Farke, in his post-match interview over the weekend, said that even at the start of the season, he actually told his players it was only 5% chance that they were going to stay up. And I remember speaking to someone around the club, and I asked them, I think this was in about November time, I was like, do you reckon if things got bad enough that you'd sack Daniel Farke, despite the fact that, you know, he's got you to this place earlier than expected? And the response back was, well, he's bought a house. And I think that was reflective of how comfortable they were, and also the fact that they know that the Premier League is not a kind of financial fight that they want to get in. They don't want to be in a situation like West Ham where they spend 100 million and just keep their heads above water because they're not robust enough to deal with that. And there is one side of me that does respect it. And I also think that if we're going to judge them on being relegated this season, we could probably hold off in terms of, you know, really peppering their structure and peppering Daniel Farke and wait to see how they actually come out of the following season, what they get back up and what they're like when they come back to the Premier League, say in the next 2 years, 3 years. Because if they come back and they're much the same, then you kind of think, you know, what is this all for? Why don't you just give it a go? They need to learn some serious lessons from how they conducted themselves on the field, because of the teams that got promoted last year, the only team that could afford to play as they normally do was Sheffield United, as the league shows. So they can take the moral high ground and say that, right, we didn't spend beyond our means and we're comfortable with that. But they've got some very disgruntled fans who haven't been particularly happy with how they've acquitted themselves, particularly since the restart, which I suppose can also be down to the fact that they haven't had their usually good home support at Carrow Road. But at the same time, I hate to kind of say this because it's been blighted by the state of modern football, and I think it's endemic of the subject we talked about at the top of the show. But what use is it being promoted to the Premier League if your immediate worry has to be, fuck, will we go out of business here if we try and compete?
Yeah. It's a tough plan to execute, though, isn't it? Because the Championship is—it's not like it's easy. Championship's really, really tough on its own, you know, merits. So, planning for the Premier League from within the Championship is a hell of a job, and it just makes you wonder: will this become the norm? Because I think Norwich have now become like the most relegated team from the Premier League.
This is the fifth time.
Yeah, and so I mean, you look at the teams like West Brom as well, who could well come back up, who've been up and down a few times, and you think, actually, is this going to be sort of, you know, we look at the sort of kind of the Burnley model, and you could argue that Stoke did that before, where they try and stay in the Premier League by playing this style of football that actually effectively blunts a lot of the other Premier League styles as the money gets more and more ridiculous, and as the sort of COVID restrictions kick in, maybe we're going to see teams that are kind of actually happy to be a yo-yo team, where like a yo-yo team is an ambition, and it looks like Norwich are kind of banking on that.
Do you enjoy the idea that buying a house is the sort of thing you could do to state your claim on a job? So you like come to an interview and you're like, oh, you know, what have you been up to lately? Well, I've actually just bought a house around the corner.
But, very Partridge.
That's what I did to Ramble, actually.
I just bought a house.
but that's, I suppose that's just the nature of football now, isn't it? That you can get rid of managers so quickly that I think they would be reticent to commit, lay down any roots, would they?
Stay in the Larry.
Yeah.
Without your family.
Yeah. Let me just read you a quick email from Nick Saxton on Norwich. He says, hi team, I understand Luke has come in for some hefty criticism for suggesting that a team bottom of the league with the fewest goals scored and second worst defensive record, it's actually now the first worst after this weekend, but might not actually be that good. Of course, this isn't to say they don't play technically proficient football when they're on the ball, but football is more than that. As a Leeds fan, I watched a lot of Norwich last season, mainly in the hope that they would slip up at some point point I was forever filled with hope because their defence was distinctly average then and they have done absolutely nothing to improve it since. In the Championship, they performed so many dramatic comebacks and they had to because they constantly conceded sloppy goals. I love the way they play going forward, but you just can't ignore that occasionally you need to do some actual defending. Tell that to Arsenal. They overcame those deficiencies last season by scoring a ridiculous number of goals, but no one could have expected them to be able to replicate that in the Premier League. Keep up the good work. You made lockdown easier. Much love, Nick. Thank you, Nick. And if you want to get in touch with the show, send us praise. Go on. We'll read it out. It's show@footballrambledaily.com.
It's a really interesting conundrum there, and probably one that us three around the table can't identify with. But if you're coming into the Premier League, do you want to play in a manner that got you there in the first place, which is, you know, part of the reason that you... We all fall in love with clubs for different reasons, but we fall in love with specific players and managers because of the style of play, and especially when it brings success. And that is something that us three around the table can agree with. But when you go to the Premier League, you do have to change, don't you? If you're not one of those clubs who are lucky enough to, say, be a Newcastle, where when they drop down, they're able to come back up and just tweak a few things here and there. If you do need a complete line change in every sense, then is that fun as a fan? Exactly. Like, do you enjoy that?
It's such a tough thing, isn't it? You've got to change completely, change your style completely, and be much better than you were in your old style is effectively the challenge that so many of them face.
And it's really reflective of certain players as well. And this is kind of a neat segue, but Mikel Antonio is absolutely that kind of player that West Ham...
Sorry, did you just applaud your own segue?
I think I did, yeah, before I'd even got there.
I like it.
But with Antonio, Antonio is exactly the kind of player who he's very hardworking and his strengths kind of rest in his enthusiasm rather than his quality with the ball at his feet. And West Ham absolutely think they're too good for that kind of player. And that kind of player generally thrives in lower clubs. And I'm thinking kind of people like Jamie Mackie as well, who just run and run and run and run.
Shane Long.
Yes, and Shane Long. And West Ham have spent so much money trying to, I suppose, downgrade Antonio. And now he is their main striker, scoring those four goals in the weekend and getting a bit of joy and suddenly kind of, you know, he is one of the main bright sparks of West Ham. And incidentally, because his personality is so infectious, he's kind of got a few of, you know, a few of the neutrals on side as well. But yeah, it is kind of interesting because Antonio is the kind of player that would get you promoted and then you might just have to bin, you know, if you want to sign that kind of Sebastian Haller, for example. So yeah, it's a strange situation that I don't envy of any teams that come up and those sets of fans either.
Haul from him though, from Antonio. That third goal,
the most goal of all time,
unbelievable. Yeah.
All you need to get back in form, or to get in form, or to score four goals is for Vish to nominate you for Betway Four to Score. So
there
keep an eye on it, people.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. His interview as well, when he was talking about, like, so he's the first West Ham player to score a hat-trick in the Premier League. The previous West Ham player to do so in the top flight was Tony Cotty, I think, for the Premier League era. But the interviewer told that to him. He's like, yeah. I think I'm also the first person to score four as well for West Ham. And then started reeling off other accolades that he'd clearly just been told about.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, I love that.
I know that a lot of players, as part of their media training, do what they can to downplay their own personal achievements. But it's just nice to see someone excited about something they've done. You know?
Yeah, it really is. And what the movement generally in the relegation battle over the weekend means is, as we mentioned, all the clubs, apart from Norwich, of course, won. West Ham sent Norwich down. Thanks, Mikel Antonio. Watford beat Newcastle. Bournemouth 4, Leicester 1, we've talked about. And Villa beat Crystal Palace. West Ham host Watford on Friday for a cheeky 1-1.
The ferryman has taken Norwich down. We all thought it would be with West Ham, but he's branching out. This is bad news for Watford in particular.
This is serious. Keep an eye on that one. Does that help Villa though? Your theory is blown wide open.
That's true. I mean, maybe the ferryman's going to have a say in the theory as well.
More on that to follow. We need to get to some serious news before we wrap things up, which is that a song called My Miggy appears to have gone to number 3 in Paraguay. And it's part of an EP called Toon Army Season, spelt with a C.
Yeah, season with a C.
I think it's because it's a Swedish rapper called Mick C. We were alerted to this by a tweet and we absolutely love it. He has created an album that is focused around core members of the Newcastle squad, including SM, Fabian Scher, and of course, Miguel Almiron. Choice lyrics such as, Jonjo Shelvey as well. Yonjo Shelveyman is one of the riffs.
Mm-hmm. The ferryman and the Shelveyman.
The Fabian Scher song features He's a Maradona at the back.
He is.
I love that.
And I think something about if he slept with his girlfriend, it'll be all right.
Something like that, yeah. I think that's a charm.
So we don't endorse necessarily the messages contained within, but...
Well, you know, they might be in a loving, open relationship. It's not for us to judge.
Yeah, that's very off-brand for a rapper, because rappers usually talk about stealing other people's girlfriends.
Yeah. He's quite open to this with Newcastle players.
Come one, come all.
It's really interesting. One of the lyrics is, "We are the Georgie boys. We're going to win the Football League and we're going to win the cup." But which makes it sound like he doesn't know what he's talking about. There's a lot of references throughout. It's like, yeah, no, he clearly lives and breathes Newcastle. He's got a Newcastle tattoo on his chest as well.
Well, he's just going to be optimistic.
Yeah, it's great. Give it a listen. I'll put a link in the synopsis and do give it a listen.
Who would you be singing about if you had to record an EP? About Arsenal, Jim.
About Arsenal, I think
after the weekend, Emi Martinez is your only bet, to be honest.
I think maybe...
Also, that Emi Martinez is a name that you can do a lot with. It rhymes with a lot. You can kind of stretch it out.
So there's a lot of places to start, really, I suppose. Stepanovs, Mustafi, Gallison, David Luiz, Andre Santos, Kieran Gibbs and Carl Jenkinson, Armand Traore, Seb Scalacci, Sender Ossigan, Debussy, Gabriel, Johan Giroud and Mikkel Silvestre. We didn't start the fire! There's that many questionable Arsenal defenders that you can do a Billy Joel parody about it. Completely off the cuff, obviously.
Impressive stuff. Do you have a completely off the cuff United riff for us, Fish?
No, I don't. I've never been a good freestyler, to be honest, even though I did actually try once when I was young, which we won't go into.
Is it available online at all?
It is not available online, thank fuck. I have an ex who would happily share that with you, but
Get in touch.
Daily footballramble.com.
Genuinely, I might as well go into it. I don't know why I did this, but to woo her, I would memorize bits of hip hop lyrics, and I ended up memorizing the entire Nelly rap in the NSYNC Girlfriend remix, which I still remember, and I won't be doing, but. As I move on.
Please, will you do it?
No, I can't. I can't do it.
Can you please do it?
I really can't do it. I'm going to need the music and I'm not going to do it.
Mm.
And we can't use music on podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. Yeah, that's too. I'm not going to do it is the main reason.
Bring out the old jazz flute. I couldn't really think of too many people to rap about, but I thought, like, who would I like to see rap in that United team? Mm. And it's Phil Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because, there was, during the 90s, there was a group called Farside, and one of their rappers went solo in, 2000, a guy called Fat Lip, and his style was renowned as being, basically, why it was so different was that he was really downtrodden, and it was all about misery, and he would rap, basically, about losing girlfriends and kind of being out of luck and being out of work. What's Up Fat Lib would be one of his more famous songs. And I like the idea that Phil Jones is just kind of like reeling off an album of just his own mistakes. And the front cover obviously is that image of him, you know, crawling on the floor. I want to give Phil Jones studio time to give me 16 bars, basically. That's all I want from the rest of the season.
I'd like to see him as a hype man, just sort of gurning in the background of someone else doing their thing.
I think
just occasionally sliding in to back up a line.
And taking out the DJ.
I would release, obviously, a pop song about Heung-min Son called the Heung-min Son song. Or Heung-min Song.
Heung-min Song, yeah. Yeah.
I reckon LaMelo would be quite a good rapper because he's a bit grimy. He's a bit nasty, isn't he? I reckon he could do you a proper good diss track.
Let's get on to it. Pull in the contacts, see what we can do.
You didn't get any of those references, did you?
I was hoping to move the conversation on.
You knew all the words individually, put together, and they made no sense.
Yes.
And you could pronunciate them properly, but other than that...
I think in some ways that's the kind of activity we're going for with this football ramble, isn't it? All the words are broadly in here.
Yeah. Do you know, like, when...
Is it coherent?
Some we've made up.
Do you know, like, you talk about, like, oh, if an alien came to Earth and took human form, you know, would you be able to suss it out?
It's me.
That's what you would say.
I would say I was an alien.
Yeah.
Well, on that bombshell, that's been the Football Ramble. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Vish.
Goodbye.
I've been Casper the Friendly Ghost. Tomorrow's show, Marcus, Andy and Pete. Don't miss it. See you next time. Doesn't work.
Not an alien.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.